Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour with your hosts, Katie Hake and Lauren Wrighton.
Hey guys, welcome to today's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. I'm so excited for our special guest today. Her name is Brenna O'Malley. She's a registered dietitian and owner and creator of The Wellful. Her private practice is 100% virtual, which means she can work anywhere she wants. She's actually in Bermuda recording this episode. But she also has a background in marketing and consults with some major food companies in the industry. So today we're going to talk a lot about the marketing aspect around food and the language that these companies use and the language that we use and how those messages really can affect our relationship with food. If you stay tuned till the end of the episode, she's going to give you some more information on some awesome programs that she has available and explain a little bit about the work that she does with her own clients all around the country. All right, you guys are in for a treat. So on to the show. Brenna, thanks so much for being on the podcast. So happy to have you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm so excited to chat and be here.
Let's first just start off right away. Tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of your background as a dietitian. We are both alike and we wear a ton of different hats. So tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, so I'm a dietitian. So I work one-on-one with clients, mostly in an intuitive eating and health at every size perspective. So talking a lot about like our relationship with food more so than like specific foods that we eat, which always kind of surprises people if that's something new to them. And then I also do consulting for food companies. And so kind of more on the media marketing side of like the messages that we get around food, because I think that's a really interesting piece of our relationship with food is, you know, not only what we're eating, but like how it's being advertised to us and how those like health information is being sold to us. So I kind of do both of those. So I see clients one-on-one, and then I also work with those food brands, and I kind of like yourself, like have a couple different hats. So I have a podcast that I started earlier this year where I interview women in wellness, which is really fun and kind of just another way to connect with people who are, you know, female entrepreneurs and also changing the space of like health and wellness. So yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, it's super exciting. I mean, it's so funny how there's all of us women in this wellness space, but how we just connect instantly. Like we just, you know, met virtually and you already just like kind of feel inspired and excited about the impact and really the movement and almost like this disruption that we're creating in the wellness space. So tell us a little bit more about what actually led you to start The Wellful.
Yeah. So I started The Wellful in 2017 officially, which was after I graduated from NYU where I studied nutrition. And so at that point I had worked for a couple different food startups and worked for some dietitians helping them grow their brands and was like really passionate and like learning a lot. And I kept on finding that as much as I was loving doing that for other people, I was kind of doing that thing where you really want to do something yourself, but you just kind of keep on pushing it off. Like I felt like I like wasn't an RD yet. So I just didn't feel, you know, where is my voice in that and kind of struggled with that a little bit. And then I felt like this was a big event, but I don't know if it, you know, was to anyone else. But when the coconut oil articles came out like a couple years ago and there was just so much backlash on social media. Everyone was talking about like pro coconut oil, con coconut oil. And so I just felt like there's so much confusing information out there and that I wanted to be able to like send out information, not necessarily just from myself, but like refer people to, you know, good sources of information, like people who are credentialed and have researched it versus all of this kind of nonsense that you can find so easily. So that was how I started it. And at first it was a newsletter. So I sent out like monthly newsletters, kind of recapping, you know, different articles and topics that were going on. And then it kind of just continued to grow and evolve from there. So now I have a website and the podcast and seeing clients and consulting under The Wellful. So it's been kind of cool how it evolves like that.
I love that you say that wasn't significant, but I remember that still very well. I always refer to it as the coconut craze, where it was like every single article for probably months, you know, and that was almost like the kickoff of this whole keto craze too, right? And benefits, whatever. That's a whole nother podcast that we could talk about. So that's super interesting that your perspective was more on the messaging. Like you kind of took this bigger lens of, okay, this is an issue, but it's not necessarily what the dietitians, you know, or other experts, quote unquote, in the field are saying. It's what are these bigger companies, like these bigger names saying? So let's start with, so it sounds like right off from the beginning of your career, you really started looking at things more from a media perspective and a language. So let's start with, you know, how does the language that we use around food, bodies, and health impact our relationship with food and eating?
Yeah. And actually kind of to backtrack something I didn't say is that like how I got into nutrition is I, in high school, saw a dietitian for celiac runs in my family. So I really like in high school, like didn't know much about nutrition in general. And so started seeing a dietitian and loved my relationship with her and kind of had that as just like a one-off, like she is so cool, but didn't quite think of it as a career. And so I went to school planning to study like business and marketing and loved that area. So that's really how I got into, you know, like the food side of it, because I just like liked food and loved to cook and grew up like watching the Food Network and thought like food messaging and creating a product was really cool. And then as I continued to have those internships in college, realized the impact that, well, first of all, I thought it was so interesting when I would go to these food shows and realize the people who were making food products, I have so much respect for the space, like the food and beverage industry. But it's so interesting to me that the people who can make these food products don't necessarily have any, you know, education in food or nutrition specifically. So it's kind of this interesting thing of we're getting these food products on the shelf and they're delicious and cool and fun. But then with this labeling on it, who's like, obviously it's regulated, but who's like in charge of that messaging and where that's really coming from, because it has such a big impact on us as a consumer, like, you know, so I thought that was really interesting. And that's how I ended up deciding to kind of go the RD route, but kind of keep in with this like relationship with food and food marketing area. So to kind of answer your question about, you know, how it does impact us is in so many ways. And I think it's the kind of thing that if you think about it, you realize it's true, right? If you think about, yeah, it makes sense that if like a product is marketed to me as guilt-free, that then I, you know, it implies that another food option or brand is like guilty, or there's like research, you know, about it too, that like if something is labeled as low fat, then, you know, we might eat up to like 50% more of it. And so it's kind of this, there's a quote from The Good Place. I don't know if you've ever seen that TV show.
Yes.
But they say something about like, there's something so human about taking something great and ruining it just a little bit so that you can have more of it, which is, you know, it's like in context and it's, you know, it's just like a funny show, but it's kind of so interesting that we have that mentality about, you know, kind of taking something out, but then having more of it versus enjoying, you know, the quote unquote, like real version of it.
That's so true. It's so interesting. And I think a lot of people don't even realize that some of the people higher up in these companies, right, like you said, don't have a nutrition background. And so especially when it comes to labeling these certain foods that are trendy or, you know, like the coconut oil, it's like, who's really making those decisions? Or is this company just have the money to put together a product and use the right words that are trendy in that moment?
Right. Like use the right words that are trendy. Also like kind of fear mongering of, you know, kind of making it seem like if you like, this is if whatever you've been eating before isn't good enough, you know, and like, this is a version that like, you don't need to feel badly about eating, or that you can eat without needing to like control yourself, which is just kind of, you know, how we talk about food is like in this way of, you know, don't have very much of it, or like having a lot of it is a negative thing. And that's just kind of like our message that we get a lot of the time. So I always use like Halo Top as an example.
You read my mind. You literally read my mind, because I just had someone reach out to me about this exact topic about Halo Top ice cream. So give us an example of, you know, kind of more what fear mongering is, and let's use Halo Top because that's perfect.
Totally. Yeah. I know. I say, I'm like, I mean, like it doesn't even, and like part of this also is like, whenever I talk about this, sometimes I get someone who says, oh, I love that food, you know, whatever I'm talking about, which is totally fine because it's like, we're not even getting into like what's inside of Halo Top, right? I'm literally just talking about the outside of the package and that, you know, how that influences your buying behavior, your eating behavior, all of these different things. So yeah, Halo Top has, they're like, I mean, I think most people probably know them, but if you don't know them, they're like a like low calorie, high protein ice cream. And they have a lot of advertising that's very like, you know, it's cutesy. It's like kind of like smart. Like, and so first of all, they have like their total calories for the pint are like the bigger than the word Halo Top on the package. So they're kind of leading with that. Yeah, that we're leading with that of like, one, that like the calories are like their emphasis point, and two, that it's not for a serving, it's for the whole pint. So, and then when you lift up the lid, on the inside of the lid, it has different variations of this, but it says something like, stop when you hit the bottom, or like, don't worry, we won't tell, kind of wording, which kind of implies that ice cream, which is something that, you know, in general, we have like this mentality of like, it's like a treat or a dessert or all these, you know, kinds of things, something that should be like, quote unquote, like should be eaten in like moderation or in a small amount or only a certain occasion. But this, you know, is giving you this permission to not only like have a satisfying amount, but like eat the whole thing, which first of all, like, I'm sure is great for business because they're not only selling, you know, one thing of Halo Top that lasts you a little bit, but they're selling, you know, whole pints. But it also just kind of talks about, you know, you're listening then to this language on the package versus like, what's a satisfying amount of ice cream or of Halo Top, or do you still like it? Or are you just like eating it because it's a permitted food and kind of plays into these black and white rules that are so common around foods, like with our relationship with food.
See, that is so interesting. You bring up so many powerful points because even as a, from a consumer perspective, I never even realized like the size of the calories. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't, you know, subconsciously, obviously that does some things to us. So talk to us a little bit more about kind of how this language affects the consumer, right? We've talked a little bit about how the company and different things that they're trying to portray, but what is happening almost like subconsciously for the consumer with a lot of these products?
Yeah. Well, so a lot of them are with foods that like in general are typically foods that we already have this, you know, maybe skewed relationship with, or like the assumption of in general, we all, you know, have some relationship with food and dieting and probably some influence of like, you know, that diets are like healthy or like positive and that eating less is better, which I think is always an interesting point too. Like low calorie things really just mean like lower energy if you kind of translate it like that. So, you know, kind of just like thinking about things like kind of reframing in that way. So yeah, if you're the consumer, then it's changing your relationship with that food of like how are you choosing what to eat? Are you choosing what to eat because you like a food, because you're in the mood for a food, or because this labeling on it is telling you that it's good or bad, or that you're good or bad for choosing it? Or something like some crackers have things like appetite suppressant, which is such an interesting terminology for food, which like, yeah, I guess if you eat, you are technically like not suppressing isn't the right word, but you're fulfilling your appetite or your hunger in that way. But it kind of just shifts how you think about food and like it kind of gets into a moral piece. I think that a lot of the times we like are taught how to diet, but we're not really taught how to like eat, or like for enjoyment or nutrition or satisfaction or all of those different things that come in. So if you're getting all of your messaging from the outside of a food label, which we know is like made for marketing purposes to sell, or, you know, then it's just not so accurate. It really muddles with your own ability to just like make choices as a consumer based on foods that you like or foods that are enjoyable to you.
Wow. Wow. It's almost like, you know, I think of the not poor person, but the poor person who, or woman who's reading this label and has all the best intentions, you know, they're simply going by with what society and culture has said, right? Like lower calorie must mean better. And so they see these foods on a label and they make those purchases based on what the company's telling them.
Totally. Yeah. And I think it's like, you know, nothing in a vacuum, right? Like if we didn't have this like overall pressure for specifically oftentimes like women to be smaller, then like these diet foods wouldn't be as prevalent and like we wouldn't be as susceptible to these claims. But yeah, it is so interesting. And I think what's interesting and like something that I talk about a lot with clients is, you know, if you were to like do like a blind taste test, let's say, of like you want ice cream, right? And like what would be, if you were to try like Halo Top and another type of ice cream that you like supposedly like both flavors that you like or something like that, and choose it and like have a satisfying amount of either one, like, and that's, you know, there's no right answer to that, but just kind of thinking about what would that be like without these external factors of, you know, these different rules and labels and good and bad and, you know, eat till the bottom and don't feel bad about this or all of those different messages that kind of influence our relationship and behavior.
So let's use clients, for example. Most of your clients, when you challenge them with that, almost that experiment or that test, what's their initial reaction?
I think with so much of this, it can be so shocking. But most of the time, it's really like, I just didn't think of it that way. Or I just didn't think that there was the ability to, you know, have something that I want and still feel like not this out of control feeling. Like when you restrict a certain food, it makes sense that you feel out of control when you do get around it, or like the quantity of food, because that's just kind of how your body reacts to like not having enough of something, or that you feel like you're never going to have this food again, like that Last Supper mentality. So by like allowing yourself to have that, I think it's normally skeptical is like normal. That's a normal response, right? Because it's just different than what you've been doing before, or uncomfortable, like all of those different feelings that come up. But then I think it's really interesting, like to sit with that or even try it out and like see what that feels like for each individual to kind of test it out. Like what's the harm in trying it or thinking about it? And it's pretty cool to like explore that, because I think that's something that like pretty much everyone can relate to, is like kind of having some experience with dieting or, you know, dipping your toes into dieting or like being, you know, fully immersed in this like diet culture. But to think about like not needing to restrict something in such a rigid way is pretty, you know, counterintuitive to a lot of the messages that we get around food and health.
Skepticism, discomfort, I think those words describe it perfectly. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, we'll use ice cream as the example, because gosh, now I'm really going to want ice cream after this episode. But people almost feel like, well, how could I not eat the whole thing? You know, it's almost like that Halo Top, for example, it promotes that. Ignore whatever your body's telling you. You have permission. Eat as much as you want. And history tells you if you've got ice cream, you know, or a kind of forbidden food, you're going to eat all of it, right? Because you can't be trusted with it in the house, but it's okay. You can eat all of it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's such a cycle, because then it's so like, exactly what you're saying, because then it's also like, if we're always eating these larger quantities of like quote unquote diet foods, because we can, because of that permission. And a lot of the times you might realize that you're like kind of struggling with that like fullness feeling of like, yeah, you are, you know, might be eating to discomfort, but because it's allowed, like that permission piece is like so important that it almost feels more important than, you know, your own feelings of like hunger and fullness. It's almost like that gets more weight than actually enjoying the food, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective. I think a lot of times people think of, you know, binge foods or, you know, foods that they would overeat on are your ice cream, your sweets, like all these typical, you know, quote, junk foods. When the reality is, a lot of these products, because of the messaging, because of the culture we've created, mm-hmm. it's causing that same relationship, just with a different type of food.
Right. And probably like if you want ice cream and you have like rice cakes instead, and then you have like some Halo Top, like at the end of that, you might still want ice cream with like fat and like the creamy, like nice texture of, you know, a real ice cream. So it's kind of like, we'll like do anything we can to avoid having what we actually want. And we'll like, you know, go about it in such a roundabout way, because I think often we like lack that permission or like acceptance that like, you know, ice cream is okay, like to have and enjoy, you know? So it is interesting how it impacts.
I love that you mentioned earlier when we started talking about how so often people are surprised that what you actually do is work more on the relationship with food and the behaviors versus less of like the actual foods themselves. So what is your favorite thing about being a dietitian? And let's start with kind of with your one-on-one role, because I have more questions about your other different roles, but yeah. What's your favorite thing about working with clients in particular?
I think it's so cool with like when someone feels more relief, like less anxious around food, or like can go to an event and not feel as obsessed with like what kinds of foods are going to be there or like how they're like looking in their outfit and can kind of enjoy things more, I think is such an awesome shift that is really cool to see someone get to and like go through. And I think I loved, like I said, like having that relationship with my dietitian in high school. And I thought that was just such a cool one-on-one experience. So it's awesome to be on the other side of that and kind of, you know, in that like really like personal, like interpersonal role with someone, like working one-on-one and seeing that progress has been really fun.
How did you find you were working through kind of some possible digestive issues? How did your dietitian handle it? And how do you feel like that impacted? Obviously, looking back, how did that really impact kind of the messaging and you taking more an intuitive route?
Yeah. So it was so interesting because when I think back on like my relationship with food growing up, I don't really remember much other than just like growing up watching the Food Network and like always like being athletic. And like, I know I just don't have like specific food memories. So I think when I started, you know, feeling really sick and then needing to like pay more attention is like really where my like memories start. So I think working with a dietitian was the first time I even noticed that I had a relationship with food or like that was a thing. Yes. So it was interesting. It was definitely a rather traditional, like we didn't, like I had never heard of intuitive eating until I was in college or anything like that. So I think that it also was something that like now I think is a good experience for like me helping clients, but is just that when you have a food allergy or something like that, where you need to start paying attention to what you're eating, it's really easy to also become kind of obsessive about what you're eating and really like restrictive in that way. And I don't think that is super unique, unfortunately. So I think that I kind of had almost the opposite experience of like, then I was like very, very aware of what I was eating and like probably not in the most helpful way always. So I think as I went to college, I started working for some dietitians who focused in eating disorders. And that is really where I found intuitive eating and more like a mindful approach to food and eating. And that really resonated with me both personally and with how I would want to practice myself.
I love hearing dietitians in general, but your background is interesting because I think a lot of times people in the fitness and wellness space, they share a lot of, well, this is what worked best for me, so it's going to work best for you. But your experience is a perfect example of how, you know, I didn't grow up having a distorted really relationship with food, but I love how you've been able to just kind of see and reframe that and see how this approach can help so many people who do have that, you know, distorted relationship, or maybe don't recognize, like you said, that they even have a relationship with food at all until right. It gets to a point where they have to face it and go, oh, wait, there's something going on and I need to pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's so interesting. I feel like almost everyone can relate to having like some sort of a disordered relationship with food. And I know that's kind of a strong statement and I don't mean it to like minimize anyone who's struggling or not struggling, but I just feel like we grow up in this culture, you know, that really emphasizes dieting and like restricting foods is bad. Or like, I know when I was in high school and like had to eat gluten-free, I would like go to like restaurants in my small town and I'd be like, oh, like no bread with this. And they'd be like, oh, like you're dieting, or like kind of just assume like, you know, that you're dieting or like that it's for weight loss or that, you know, that's your goal, which is so confusing, you know, regardless of what else is going on, but it's interesting. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Confusing. Definitely. For sure. So in addition to working one-on-one with clients, you've worked a lot more on the industry side. What has been your favorite part about that? And is it something that you do kind of weave your intuitive eating philosophy into, or how does that work? I'm so curious.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So in college, I worked more for like food startup companies, which was awesome. And that was cool because since it was so small, like I was, you know, often on a really small team, which I loved. And so I kind of got to wear a lot of hats in that way, whether it was like kind of like working with like R&D and like trying to make like a new recipe and try new recipes, which is also a fun part of that. Or, you know, more on the marketing side of like, who are we going to connect with? Like what influencers and how should, like what language should be on the label of this, which is really where I think I first like really connected that. Like I helped write the labeling for like a bottle of like a green smoothie. And I was like, this is so cool that this is going to be in the store.
And so many people don't even realize like the steps that right. a product goes through before it even hits the shelves. So you get to see all of that. That's an official taste tester. That sounds like my favorite.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So now I work more recently I've been doing more on like the media marketing side. So kind of to your point of like how I kind of weave this in. So I think, I mean, personally, I think if it was like a real diet product, I wouldn't be able to in good conscience work with them. But I think it's interesting that I haven't really brought up specifically, I guess, my philosophy unless it like makes sense, you know, in a situation. But if I'm writing copy for a brand, I think that I can just choose to not emphasize that it's like a quote low calorie food. And I think it's just a point to, you know, it's not like sales are plummeting because we're not talking about that. Or like we can talk about food in these other ways because, you know, we eat for other reasons than like just because something falls into this category of like low calorie or anything like that. So it's been kind of fun personal experiment and kind of, you know, my own research of how can you kind of push to like overtly or not to have more of these like neutral language around food too, because it does matter. Like how you're, you know, when you see an Instagram post of something that's, you know, advertising a food in a certain way, it kind of influences you.
First of all, virtual high five, because I just love hearing that. I think that's one of the awesome, exciting, and just exhilarating things about being an entrepreneur is that you kind of get to make those decisions a little bit and choose, like you said, the language that you want to use and, you know, showing that it doesn't have to be a big deal, right?
Like right.
You can still emphasize the other, or highlight, you know, some of the other positive qualities that food gives us, you know, because it is so much more than minimizing, you know, the size of our body or changing how we are.
Totally. Yeah. I think something really eye-opening, like one company that I worked with, there was like a debate over, or it was some sort of conversation about like, there was a category that you could be in of, I don't know what it was, but some category that you could be in that was like determinant on a certain number of grams of sugar and like calories in a product. But the conversation went around like, oh, do we just make it a little bit smaller or a little bit bigger or like take one of these things out of it? Like it was a mixed product. So I think just seeing that side of it, yes, that's a business decision and that's like a marketing decision. But just how that also influences, you know, that someone on the other end of it isn't necessarily just like making you something for you to eat and enjoy, but also like there are these really calculated decisions. And not that it's necessarily deceitful or negative really, but just it was interesting to see that side of it, that then we as a consumer look at that label and say, oh, like X grams of sugar is, you know, good or bad, but really it was like determined by a walnut coming off of something or something silly like that. So I think those kind of decisions are interesting to see.
I would be so interested to hear too, and maybe this would be someone that you should interview for your podcast, but like what's their background? You know, a lot of these people making their decisions about like some of these labelings, right? The space where there is that flexibility, you know, of what they can put on a product. Like what's their background and what's influencing their decisions and kind of, you know, how did they grow up around food? I would be so interested to hear somebody's story.
Yeah, actually that's so interesting. I like thinking about that. I don't know. That's a good one.
Future episodes already brewing. Okay, so I love to dream big. We love to talk on Fit Friends Happy Hour about where we're at, celebrate where we're at, also have a vision for where we're going. So what is your long-term vision for the Wellful?
Yeah, I would love to continue being like a resource for, like, I would love to like have, you know, more resources on my website, like courses and community in that respect, and just be able to like continue doing what I'm doing, but on a bigger scale. So kind of like, I really love being able to work both on like where we're getting our messages from food and then also like how it impacts our individual relationships with food. And I think that's a really like lucky role that I've been able to do, is kind of see both ends of that. So I'd love to continue doing that. And I don't know exactly what that will look like in the future, but I think, you know, kind of continuing in that way.
Let's rewind a little bit then. Mm-hmm. Tell me kind of, you know, because if you started your business, what, 2017? Oh my gosh, only 2 years ago. And yeah, you're doing so many amazing things already. Did you think then that you'd be mm-hmm. where you are now? And kind of how has that journey been just in these few short years?
Yeah, I don't think I would think I am. So something interesting is I work completely remotely. So that's different than I definitely think I would have thought. 2 years ago when I started The Wellful, I was in New York City also. And I got into my internship, my dietetic internship in Boston. So it's kind of like big transition to go there because I loved New York and felt like I would never leave if I didn't leave. So I think I would hope that I would be doing what I'm doing, but I think I always wanted to work for myself, but I don't know if I would have thought I would be here, but I'm glad I am.
Isn't that so wild? Like, that's something that I always have to remind myself and reflect on, is like, oh my gosh, you never thought that, like, probably being 100% virtual, being your mm-hmm. own boss, like creating the impact that you are, creating that community. I feel like as a, you know, student, for maybe some of our future dietitians out there, it's so hard to have that long-term thinking. Like in your brain, you're like, that's so far away. I've got it in my head, but it just seems like such a stretch. And now you're here and you're in it, and it's so wild.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, yeah, it's definitely one of those things that's good to like take a pause and like reflect on, because otherwise you just feel like you're kind of like happy, but like on the hamster wheel of like doing it and not necessarily realizing that it's like something you've wanted to do for a while.
And so I love that you say, you're like, well, it's pretty much doing what I'm doing now, but on a bigger scale, because it's like, oh my gosh, you're doing it. It's so great. So great. Yeah. We always like to ask this question to our guests. So tell us, and I know it's only Tuesday, but when everybody's listening to this, you know, think big. What is the best thing that has happened to you this week?
Well, so I'm actually in Bermuda right now.
What? Wait, hold on. Your podcast said something about the beaches in Bermuda. Do you go to Bermuda often?
So my brother lives here. So I've been like, so since I'm virtual this year, I've been kind of back and forth between, I've been visiting often. Yeah. So I'm here right now. So we went snorkeling this weekend, which was pretty awesome. So that's probably the best part of my week so far.
That is amazing. Are you going to be a, what do we call it, like snowbird then? Will you go there when it's cold and brutal in New York and Boston?
I know, that would be smart. I was here this winter, which was awesome. So that was definitely, I know, I should work that out with him.
Here in the Midwest, winters are brutal, but I can only imagine East Coast.
I know. I'm not looking forward to it.
Before we wrap up today's episode, we have to share with our fit friends about your goodbye guilt guide, because it's just like, it's a no-brainer. I know my people listening need this. So tell us what exactly that guide is and why you created it.
Yeah. So as you can tell, I love to talk about like marketing and like guilt-free marketing and guilt-free foods. I feel like I always talk about, but it's also something that is super common with clients that I work with and in just conversations with, honestly, friends, like feeling guilty about eating something or feeling like badly and kind of using that same language to kind of talk about food that you talk about yourself. And it muddles like our relationship with food. So I loved the idea of like kind of just like saying goodbye to guilt. And so I do these posts on Instagram often where I like talk about changing the way that we're talking about food and kind of swapping out language. So the guide is kind of based on that. So it's about the language we use around food and how it matters and how to navigate food marketing, kind of like we talked about today, and like develop a more positive relationship with food. And it also has some like self-talk exercises in it and how to like stop negative thoughts in their tracks. So It's an instant download and it's $10. So it's been something that's been really useful for a lot of like clients and also just people who have reached out, have like said that it's been like a nice resource to have, you know, when you're not like on Instagram all the time or like seeing all these messages, to kind of have something like on your person that you can kind of refer to also.
So often, as you know, intuitive eating dietitians, I think when we talk, sometimes a lot of it sounds fluffy. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't sound tangible and it sounds like such a far reach. So I love that you created this guide because it's like action. It's like, this is what we're talking about, but this is how you actually make the change, right? Because we can learn, we can listen, you know, to all the podcasts in the world, but until we actually take action on them, nothing changes.
Totally.
So where can we find that guide?
Yeah. So it's on my website, onthewellful.com under shop. So you can just click there. You can also get there from my Instagram too, which is just @thewellful. So I make it, it's around, you can find it.
We'll be sure to link Brenna's website as well as her Instagram and that guide in our show notes, but be sure to reach out. Her Instagram is positive. You know, we all need more of that positivity and positive diet-free messages in our feed. So be sure to follow her there. Brenna, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, your expertise on the podcast today. This is truly powerful and it's really going to make an impact. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Katie. I'm so glad we could do that.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook @FitFriendsHappyHour. Talk to you next time.